We are continuing in our studies of the book of Ecclesiastes. This is our fourth sermon in the book. I think it will be a series of seven sermons, so we're exactly midway through. And today we'll be in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 4 through 8, and then chapter 5, verses 8, all the way down through the conclusion of chapter 6. I'll be reading these passages in their entirety. If you're having trouble finding the book of Ecclesiastes, it's just past or to the right of midway in your Bible. So if you open up to the middle of your Bible, you probably hit the book of Psalms, and then two books over to the right from there. It's a small one, so it can be kind of tricky to find, but it's there. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, starting in verse 4. Then I saw that all toil and all skill in work come from a man's envy of his neighbor. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. The fool folds his hands and eats his own flesh. Better is a handful of quietness than two handfuls of toil and striving after wind. Again, I saw vanity under the sun, one person who has no other, either son or brother. Yet there is no end to all his toil, and his eyes are never satisfied with riches, so that he never asks, "For whom am I toiling and depriving myself of pleasure?" This also is vanity and an unhappy business. Now, chapter 5, starting off in verse 8. If you see in a province the oppression of the poor and the violation of justice and righteousness, do not be amazed at the matter. For the higher official is watched by a higher, and there are yet higher ones over them. But this is gain for a land in every way, a king committed to cultivating fields. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This also is vanity. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. And what advantage has their owner but to see them with his eyes? Sweet is the sleep of a laborer, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep. There is a grievous evil that I have seen under the sun. Riches were kept by their owner to his hurt, and those riches were lost in a bad venture. He is a father of a son, but has nothing in his hand. As he came from his mother's womb, so shall he go again, naked as he came, and he shall take nothing for his toil that he may carry away in his hand. This also is a grievous evil. Just as he came, so shall he go. And what gain is there to him who toils under the wind, who toils for the wind? Moreover, all his days he eats in darkness and with much vexation and sickness and anger. Behold, I have seen what is good and fitting, is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun, the few days of his life that God has given him, for this is his lot. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil. This is the gift of God. For he will not much remember the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart. Chapter 6, verse 1. There is an evil that I've seen under the sun, and it lies heavy on mankind. A man to whom God gives wealth and possessions and honor, so that he lacks nothing of all that he desires, yet God does not give him the power to enjoy them. But a stranger enjoys them. This is vanity. It is a grievous evil. If a man fathers 100 children and lives many years, so the days of his years are many, but his soul is not satisfied with life's good things, and he has no burial, I say a stillborn child is better off than he. For it comes in vanity and goes in darkness, and in darkness its name is covered. Moreover, it has not seen the sun or known anything, yet it finds rest rather than he. Even though he should live 1,000 years twice over, yet enjoy no good, do not all go to the one place? All the toil of a man is for his mouth, yet his appetite is not satisfied. For what advantage has the wise man over the fool, and what does the poor have who knows how to conduct himself before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the appetite. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. Whatever has come to be has already been named, and it is known what man is, and that he is not able to dispute with one stronger than he. The more words, the more vanity, and what advantage is this to the man? For who knows what is good for man while he lives the few days of his vain life, which he passes like a shadow? For who can tell man what will be after him under the sun? The word of the Lord. So we've been studying the book of Ecclesiastes for a few weeks now, and what we've said is that the book of Ecclesiastes is asking a question. What is the key that unlocks life's meaning? No doubt that's a question you've had, all of us have wrestled with. What makes sense of life? As the author puts it in another place, what's the scheme of the world, the scheme of things? How do we understand life's purpose? What is life's meaning? What makes life really significant? What makes life worth it? What profits? What really counts in the end? What key unlocks the meaning of life? Now, the author, as you perhaps remember, has begun to observe life under the sun and to see things. And he says that so much of what we understand about life, he says it's vain or it's full of vanity. One of the catchphrases he uses is, it's like chasing after the wind. You know something's there, but you can't really get a hold of it. And he says all of life, every part of life is marred by sin, by the fallen estate in which we live. And he says it's all plagued by this idea of vanity, by which he means things are futile, they are frustrating, and they are fleeting. And the question becomes, well, how do we prop up life then with meaning? How do we make sense of it all? And the author, who's committed to the process of answering this question, all through the book, goes through different solutions, different would-be answers. You've seen now his first attempt at answering that question. Perhaps it's our pleasure, the enjoyment we have from certain things, the stimulus we receive. It's our pleasures which make sense of life, that life is all about feeling good. Of course, the author concludes, no, that too is vanity, for various reasons, as we've seen. And the second thing the author pursues is that perhaps life is about permanence, doing something significant, an intellectual pursuit, or actually establishing yourself by some act or deed or venture which will last and be of lasting substance. Of course, the author concludes, no, that too is vanity. And now we begin in these two passages, of which there are several in Ecclesiastes which speak about money and wealth and possessions. We begin this pursuit that Solomon embarks on concerning possessions. Are possessions the key to life? I remember from my childhood a poster of Garfield the cat. You remember Garfield, right? And for whatever reason, I remember this poster very vividly. And he's in front of a mansion, and he has cars, and maybe a swimming pool, and various material things. And the caption says, "He who dies with the most toys wins." Now, I guess that few of you would want to put it that starkly. And yet, is that not a dominant philosophy for life in our world? People are all about the acquisition of things, the pursuit of more and more possessions. Well, Solomon was a man who, as he says in chapter 2, verse 7, he says, "I acquired very much possessions." Of course, he was a king in Israel, and he was a man of unparalleled wealth for his generation. I once heard Bill Gates in an interview, I read an interview of Bill Gates, and the interviewer said, "Are you able to understand the enormity of your wealth? And if so, how?" And Bill Gates said this. He said, "I think of it like this. There's nothing that I can't buy." And that's how life was for Solomon. He was a king. His empire had unparalleled economic prosperity. It says in 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 27, there are many verses and actually paragraphs in the Bible that describe Solomon's great empire. But this one captures it, verse 27. It says that under Solomon, silver was as plentiful as stones, and that the cedars of Lebanon were more abundant than the sycamore tree. That's like saying, under President so-and-so, people were using $100 bills like dimes, and exquisite building material such as granite countertops, they were everyday things like formica. This is